dawn's early light. What so proudly we hail at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripe and bright star through the perilous fight. Oh, the ramparts we watch were so gallantly streaming, and the rocket's red glare, the long bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, save us that star-spangled banner yet wave over the land and all the free and the home of the brave.
You're listening to the Equisport Radio Network. I'm Les Salzman, and along with me is Alora Allen, and we've got two very, very special guests today. And it's concerning a subject that I've been involved with since I was 6 years old, the diving horse on the Steel Pier, and diving horses in general throughout the United States. I've got the infamous Jim Crane, the singing lifeguard, the man, the myth, the legend, and the... And we also have the author of a very, very exciting book, The Last Diving Horse in America, Cynthia Brannigan. And the reason we wanted to do this is everywhere that Alora and I go, and we say we're from Atlantic City, they say, did they really have the diving horse? And they also wanted to know, were the horses afraid? Were they scared? How were they taken care of? Well, Jim was... the last groom, pretty much.
Yep.
And Cynthia saved a couple of those horses at the end of their career. So, guys, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for having us. I mean, this is great.
Well, we're thrilled to have you aboard. Jim, you and I were talking just a few minutes ago about the Steel Pier back in those days. And
oh, yeah.
You took care of the diving horses. From when to when?
I took it over in 1970, but I was working out in the circus for all those years, so I was around those horses all the time. And Gamal, Powderface, and later on we got Shiloh and Amir. We had Amir, too, but the Powderface and Gamal... dove from like the 50s, like 1957 or so. And I actually worked for Lorena when we did that. But I did everything else on the pier. I ran the diving bell. I was on the games. And I started there when I was 9 years old. And I told them I was 16. And they believed me. And it was the greatest job in the world because you worked 7 days a week, got to see every major act ever, and, you know, the Beatles in 64, I mean, you know, the whole nine yards. But to be part of that diving horse act and seeing those horses, I mean, I have such an affinity for them. And then Cynthia, you know, like when the pier closed, they got rid of Powderface, like, right away. And that was really sad, and I had heard that. But I did not know that she had saved Gamal and until years later. So it was like getting my friend back, who was one of my favorite horses. I used to walk him on the beach every day, Les. And your parents had the rental place, too, right?
Yeah. And so it was interesting because that's how I got started in the horse business, you know, with the horses on the beach. And I would go to the Steel Pier just like every other kid, and we'd watch those diving horses. And just, it always was amazing to me how they came
off the ramp so elegantly.
Oh,
got
hell
into
the yeah. They love doing it. I love these people that... Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's what I was going to ask you. Do they enjoy doing it? And what kind of cams
did they get? Oh, God, please. Powderface was the biggest ham in the world. That's when we had Gene Hart as our MC.
The former Philadelphia Flyers.
He was with the Flyers. Yeah. And anyway, I mean, Powderface would stand up there, and Gene would say to him, you feel like diving today, Powder? And, you know, you get the head shake, no. And Patty's already sitting on him. Patty Dolan is already sitting on him. And then finally, he would go, and, you know, it was amazing. And the other guy, Jack Montez, our MC, I mean, he had Dima and all the other horses, and they had a whole repartee with the MCs. It was like, you know, and everybody always says they were forced. No, they weren't. They liked doing it. They were all big hams, and the SPCA was there every day at 11 o'clock for inspection. I mean, I remember that.
Now, they worked for 3 or 4 months during the summer.
Right. And then they relaxed out in Absecon for the rest of the winter.
Now, were they at Hamill's Farm?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I used to go out there and see them and visit them.
And so that was a nice big farm, plenty of grazing area. The one thing that impressed me was that these horses were still working until they were in their 20s.
Right.
And they love
doing it.
How old was Gamal when you rescued him?
He was, he and I were both the same age, 26 years old.
Right. There you go.
He was thin, but that's got nothing to do with the diving. He had spent 1 year between the close of the act on the steel pier. He was purchased at a previous auction by a summer camp. So he lived for a year in Maryland. And quite frankly, they didn't take very good care of him. He was thin. He had an abscess in one of his hooves. His teeth needed to be dealt with. But he came, and he had worms, of course. But he made a comeback.
But can I ask you a question? Now, he was in his 20s. Was he full of arthritis and did he have big knees and ankles, or was he in pretty good shape?
Oh, no. Once he got rid of the parasites and the hoof problem, the teeth, and got some good feed, he was sleek, shiny, he would show off. You know,
he was a pretty ham. That's what he was.
Like, take a look at this, you know?
You know, and that's my point, is that if he wasn't being taken care of properly, by the age of 26, he probably couldn't have walked. Okay, but he was taken care of properly for most of his life. Then he was very fortunate to get you in his life.
Well, we were both fortunate, I would say. But back to the way, you know, that they enjoyed it, I had occasion to meet a man named Bill Diddy, who I'm sure you've heard of, who used to do the horses earlier. And he said that when they would pick out a horse to see if it had potential for the act, they would, you know, test it in various ways. And one of the main things was it had to like water. And it also had to be a kind of a fearless show-off of a horse. And if it didn't meet that criteria, it was eliminated immediately. So there's no question that the horses who eventually made the cut and wound up at the steel pier, they were suited for the job. They had a job interview beforehand, basically.
Jim, about how many shows a day did they do?
Four.
But they rotated horses through it, so
yeah. But it was mainly just Powder and Gamal, because they were the ones that, you know, that were there. And then they got Amir, who was crazy. I mean, that was an ex-race horse. And I remember that one. But, you know, you had Dima, and you had all the different ones back in the day. But they would rotate it every time. But a lot of them like to do it. I was actually there when they did the Spidel Twist-A-Flex thing with the Timex watch. John Cameron Swayze was there. And they strapped the watch to Powderface's hoof. And he jumped and everything, and they did the whole bit. And the Spidel broke. It went to the bottom, so they had to wait an hour for him to rest, and then they did it again. I'd love to see that commercial.
And that it took a licking and kept on ticking.
Takes a licking and keeps on ticking.
And John Cameron Swayze was right there. That was something. And that's the week Ed Sullivan was there, too. He was there shooting different circus acts out on the end.
And people don't realize
that. Really big on that.
There was a great circus at the end of the pier.
Oh, best circus in town. I mean, you know, and it's still the Hammett Morton Circus is still traveling up in New England, and the youngest member, Jimmy Hammett, his father was the one that became general manager after George passed away. But he is running that show. That show is, and it still has live animals and everything too, which I think that's a way to for the circus owners to, you know, give the high sign to the people that took the animals out, because those animals were well treated. I mean, even all the ones that came on the pier. I mean, we had everybody. We had Clyde Beatty's daughter and. With her lions and tigers, and we had lots of elephants and everything. It was, you know, and none of them were treated sadly. You know, that's what I loved about the pier.
Cynthia, do you remember the horse that you saw when you were 11 years old?
Oh, I remember vividly, and I believe it was Powderface because it was a great horse. And it just... I didn't realize it at the time, but I think it's safe to say in retrospect, it kind of changed my life. I mean, obviously, I became associated with the diving horses several decades later, or a decade and a half later. But it also, I was amazed and very impressed with the athleticism, and also, oddly, thinking about what lesson can this teach us. You know, something that was impossible, a horse diving. Whoever heard of such a thing? And yet, the horse made it possible. So it's not that hard to extrapolate and think about how we can use that lesson in our everyday lives.
Did Powderface have on the LBG saddle cloth?
No, the LBG,
that's him. Yeah, no, they did that commercial with Powder.
The one time when I saw the horses happened to be during the Democratic Convention in 1964, and it was a wild scene, especially as an 11-year-old. I mean, my eyes were big the whole time, but everything was LBJ and craziness going on the boardwalk and out in the steel pier. I don't think we'll see its like again.
You know, not to tell personal stories, I was 12 then, so I guess I'm the oldest guy in the room, as usual. But at the time, my parents owned a hotel next to Convention Hall called The Pageant. And just like you, that was the most eye-popping experience of my life.
Yes.
The Democratic Convention and everything that was going on there. Yeah, you know, it was great. So, Laura was also thinking about, you had mentioned that he changed your life. Gamal changed your life.
Oh, he definitely did. For a couple of reasons. One is that I really wasn't a horse person. I loved horses, and I would do anything for them, but I never had a horse. I never took riding lessons. I kind of admired them from afar. Now all of a sudden I was responsible for one. And I think Gamal sensed that I didn't know what I was doing. And so
they had that ability.
He would. Yes. Oh, yes, he would. He knew when I first was around him. Oh, please. They know.
But he was not going to take it easy on me. And
no.
He wasn't going to help me. I had to figure it out on my own. So it was really a trial and error relationship in the beginning. But as time went on, I developed more confidence. Not only with him, but kind of in the world at large. I wasn't exactly a extroverted, confident person. But he helped me in that regard. And in the book, I talk about, I'd say, the watershed moment, because it was literally a watershed moment. I used to take him out of the barn, and which was within walking distance of the Delaware River, not too far from where George Washington crossed the Delaware, just north of that, during the American Revolution. But I would take him along the canal, the towpath, and then down some steps to an abandoned, it was someone's abandoned yard, backyard, but now it was just a field of beautiful green grass. So he would be munching away, and one day he lifted his head and noticed, hey, there's a river there, like lots of water. And he loved water, so he kind of dragged me right into the water, and I thought, well, this is it. This is how I'm going to die, and the horse is going to die, too.
Oh, that's so cool.
Say. But there are currents in the Delaware River, and as we started wading out farther than I wanted to, I realized I had to do something. This was my moment. I had to bring the horse in. So I leapt up on his back and, you know, used the rope and made it clear to him we were going to shore.
We're going back.
And he did. It was the first time ever that he took direction from me. And we got back on land, and he shook himself off. And I swear, he gave me a look like, okay, you passed the test. And then
there you go.
Went back to the barn. And so that was very important in many ways for me, how the horse.
I was going to interject. When I was a groom and they do the dive, Kamal was the worst because I'd be, like, trying to get girls. I'm dressed with my little outfit on and everything. And he would shake at the top of that ramp and soak my butt every time. I mean, he would always do that. And it was so funny. And when people would, like, come up and see the horses, you know, when they were in their stalls, in the windows. Now, Powder was really a ham. I mean, he really was. And I'd be standing there saying, this is Powder Face and everything. And he would push my shoulder and make, like, a noise, like, bah! Like, get out of the way. They want to take pictures, you know.
They don't want to see you.
It's amazing.
They want to see
horses
me.
Are so cool.
You know, it's kind of interesting because both of you were kind of new to the horses, and the horses really showed their personalities to you.
Oh, yeah.
And that's kind of the neat thing about having them around. You know,
When I used to go out to Hamels, I'd go out in the wintertime, with apples and some sugar and everything. And I'd shut the door in my car, and they're already in the yard. They were like, okay, Jimmy's here. You know, time to eat. You know what I mean? It was, like, so funny. But, I mean, it's an amazing story, you know, and every time you put something on Facebook, everybody kind of moans about it. They were pushed, prepped, or whatever. No, they weren't. They had air-conditioned, heated stalls with televisions in them. I mean, they had it made. They really did. They were treated like the superstars they were.
And Cynthia's perfect proof of what those horses were at the end of the line. And that's, you know, one of the big things in the thoroughbred industry right now is aftercare, after the horses are done racing. How are they being taken care of? But in this case, the horse, through all this life of his, 20-some-odd years, 26 years, he still had his personality. He still had his basic health. And more importantly, he still had that tremendous regard of caring for a human.
Right. That's the way they are. I wanted to tell you a cool thing that happened. You know, like everybody knows I've been around horses and everything. We were up in Bartow, PA, at my sister-in-law's house, and they live pretty far out, you know, and a lot of rural area there, you know, and we come up on this farm, and I see two white horses, and we're riding in like one of those, you know, XV things or whatever. And I said, watch this. And all I did was go, and they came running to the fence because there's somebody there. You know, they just knew that I was calling them to come over. It was like, and my wife looks at me and goes, horse whisperer, that's him. You know, he scares me. But anyway, was really fun.
It's been great having both of you on, and we've got to jump off in a few seconds. Cynthia, I would love to have you back on to talk about your relationship with Cleveland Amory, who was one of my childhood heroes.
Oh, wow.
You know, he was just so ahead of his time and
yes,
such
he
a brilliant
was.
Man.
You know, my mentor, I think of him every day.
Most kids' on. Parents have them reading the Odyssey and Shakespeare. My father and grandfather in particular had me reading his books.
Wow.
So I'd love to talk with you about him.
I'd love it.
In a separate show. And
yep.
Jim, we hope to have you on as a regular. I mean,
well, I told you I'm coming down there. I want to work at the barn.
I got stalls for you to muck. I just don't think
I'll do a good job. I promise. Don't worry. You know, my wife, she can't cook at all. I mean, you know, I don't think meatloaf should glow in the dark. You know what I mean?
Okay, Rodney.
No respect. None.
If I had the drum, I'd give you the rim shot.
Well, there you go.
It has been so much fun talking with both of you.
Can I just throw in a plug for me? www.jimcrane.com. That's my website. And we're going to be at Smithville for the Italian Festival on September the 27th. We're doing that out there in Smithville. That's our 12th year performing out there at that. And I'm going to be the narrator for the end of the Vietnam War. That's coming up on the 17th out at ACC. They're going to have the replica of the Vietnam Wall out there. And I am so proud to be involved with that. That is really a great
thing.
ACC
has been such an advocate for the veterans for 60 years.
It's great always,
that you're doing
always.
That. Cynthia,
and me and you are just old Atlantic City people who still love it. That's all there is to it.
That's it. And Cynthia, let's give the book a plug and some of the things that you're doing. Go ahead.
Happy to. Again, the book is called The Last Diving Horse in America. It's on Amazon. It's also on the website of my Greyhound Adoption Group because I've devoted the last 35 years of my life to finding homes for retired racing greyhounds. So you can learn more about that at CynthiaBrannigan.com.
Excellent. Again, guys, thank you so much. This will be up probably in about 24 hours. It's going to be on roughly 150 different platforms, and we'll also have a slideshow accompanying it on Facebook. So we really appreciate you being with us.
Just make sure you get my good side, will you, please? You know, I'm 71 years old,
away.
For God's sake.
You would have to be walking away for us to get you good side.
All right. Hey, God bless both of you. This was really fun. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Bye. See you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.